Greetings. You are listening to Christian Radio, WYYC, York, Pennsylvania, presenting the 15 Minutes of the End Time Religious Matrix, hosted by CephasMinistry.com, Westminster, Colorado, since 1992. Your host is Rita Williams. Email r421@earthlink.net. People always ask, why Cephas and how do you spell Cephas? In John 1, 42 and 1 Peter 2:5, the Bible states Cephas represents a stone. Cephas is spelled C-E-P-H-A-S. C as in Charles, E, P as in Peter, H as in help, A, S as in Sam. Matrix is most likely another unfamiliar concept if you have not seen the movie Matrix. Webster's Dictionary states the following. Matrix is something like a mold or womb that gives form, foundation, or origin to something else enclosed inside of it. Matrix can also apply to many concepts. Take a womb, for instance, in which a baby is conceived. The mother's body nourishes the child. She has no idea what kind of individual the child is going to be once it is outside of the womb. This program is about exposing the religious matrix. It's something that is inside the womb of the Vatican, which we call the religious matrix, could be you, may or may not be caught up in it. Your eternal life could be in jeopardy if you don't pay close attention to this program. It will be packed with information that you need to know if you are the something that is inside of the religious matrix. Cephas Ministry has dedicated 3 websites to exposing the religious matrix. Cephas Ministry has cephas-radio.com. Programs are archived and downloadable there. Cephas-news.com. It has 60 free films exposing the religious matrix. And matrix.cephasministry.com, where comments are active. The reason for this broadcast is Pope Francis. He suddenly came on the scene and seemingly like a messiah, attracts people of faith, interfaith, of all faith, Hollywood, media, and even atheists to himself as no other pope has before. Even though Pope Francis tells people that he doesn't have time left to live, much time left to live, he travels from country to country. To his own amazement, he is greeted by millions expressing euphoria. Many are moved to tears, hoping he will be an acting savior, although his message is about worldly issues like global warming, poverty, and tolerance. Most believers are pro-Israel. The Pope Francis is pro-Palestinians, who are Muslims. What I noticed recently, Christians seem to go the same way. Why are they moving in the direction of Islam? Do you know that Christianity and Islam have developed a new movement named Chrislam? In spite of the fact that Christians are taught in 2 Corinthians 6:15, and what concord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has he that believeth with an infidel? In one of the last books of the Old Testament, the book of Zechariah, chapter 2, verse 1 through 13, King James Version, the prophet describes what God told him. Jerusalem shall be inhabited as a town without walls for the multitude of men. God promises that he will be the glory in Jerusalem again. The Lord told Zion to come home because he wants them to know him and rejoice because he plans to live in the midst of them. The verses end with, "And the Lord shall inherit Judah, his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. Be silent, O all flesh, before the Lord, for he is raised up of his holy habitation." The undercurrent, which we call the religious matrix, began with Pope John Paul II. With Vatican II, the Vatican took a new direction that may or may not be noticed by Catholics. Pope Francis is an atheist gathering the tares, Matthew 13, verse 30. Those who follow him will be subject to the delusion in 2 Thessalonians 2:11. In other words, they will be punished with spiritual blindness. The Word was made flesh, John 1:14, representing Jesus Christ. John 14, verse 6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." Since God left the preaching up to men, I will be letting them tell you what to be aware of. Keep listening after I sign off. To stay connected, subscribe to free newsletters at go-deepest.com. God bless you and thanks for listening. Shalom. Following is part one of an excerpt from religiousmatrix.com.
Romanism is now regarded by Protestants with far greater favor than in former years in those countries where Catholicism is not in the ascendancy, and the papists are taking a conciliatory course in order to gain influence. There is an increasing indifference concerning the doctrines that separate the Reformed churches from the papal hierarchy. The opinion is gaining ground that, after all, we do not differ so widely upon vital points as has been supposed, and that a little concession on our part will bring us into better understanding with Rome. The time was when Protestants placed a high value upon the liberty of conscience which had been so dearly purchased. They taught their children to abhor popery and held that to seek harmony with Rome would be disloyalty to God. But how widely different are the sentiments now expressed. The defenders of the papacy declare that the church has been maligned, and the Protestant world are inclined to accept the statement. Many urge that it is unjust to judge the church of today by the abominations and absurdities that marked her reign during the centuries of ignorance and darkness. They excuse her horrible cruelty as the result of the barbarism of the time, and plead that the influence of modern civilization has changed her sentiments. Have these persons forgotten the claim of infallibility put forth for 800 years by this haughty power? So far from being relinquished, this claim was affirmed in the 19th century with greater positiveness than ever before. As Rome asserts that the Church never erred, nor will it, according to the Scriptures, ever err, John L. von Mosheim, Institutes of Ecclesiastical History, Book 3, Century 11, Part 2, Chapter 2, Section 9, Note 17, how can she renounce the principles which governed her course in past ages? The papal church will never relinquish her claim to infallibility. All that she has done in her persecution of those who reject her dogmas, she holds to be right. And would she not repeat the same act, should the opportunity be presented? Let the restraints now imposed by secular governments be removed, and Rome be reinstated in her former power, and there would speedily be a revival of her tyranny and persecution. A well-known writer speaks thus of the attitude of the papal hierarchy as regards freedom of conscience, and of the perils which especially threaten the United States from the success of her policy. There are many who are disposed to attribute any fear of Roman Catholicism in the United States to bigotry or childishness. Such see nothing in the character and attitude of Romanism that is hostile to our free institutions, or find nothing portentous in its growth. Let us then first compare some of the fundamental principles of our government with those of the Catholic Church, The Constitution of the United States guarantees liberty of conscience. Nothing is dearer or more fundamental. Pope Pius IX, in his encyclical letter of August 15, 1854, said, "The absurd and erroneous doctrines or ravings in defense of liberty of conscience are a most pestilential error, a pest of all others most to be dreaded in a state." The same Pope, in his encyclical letter of December 8, 1864, anathematized those who assert the liberty of conscience and of religious worship, also all such as maintain that the Church may not employ force. The pacific tone of Rome in the United States does not imply a change of heart. She is tolerant where she is helpless, says Bishop O'Connor. Religious liberty is merely endured until the opposite can be carried into effect without peril to the Catholic world. The Archbishop of St. Louis once said, "Heresy and unbelief are crimes, and in Christian countries, as in Italy and Spain, for instance, where all the people are Catholic, and where the Catholic religion is an essential part of the law of the land, they are punished as other crimes." Every cardinal, archbishop, and bishop in the Catholic Church takes an oath of allegiance to the Pope, in which occur the following words: "Heretics, schismatics, and rebels to our said Lord the Pope, or his aforesaid successors, I will to my utmost persecute and oppose." Josiah Strong, Our Country, Chapter 5, Paragraphs 2 to 4. It is true that there are real Christians in the Roman Catholic Communion. Thousands in that church are serving God according to the best life they have. They are not allowed access to his word, and therefore they do not discern the truth. They have never seen the contrast between a living heart service and a round of mere forms and ceremonies. God looks with pitying tenderness upon these souls, educated as they are in a faith that is delusive and unsatisfying. He will cause rays of light to penetrate the dense darkness that surrounds them. He will reveal to them the truth as it is in Jesus, and many will yet take their position with his people. But Romanism as a system is no more in harmony with the gospel of Christ now than at any former period in her history. The Protestant churches are in great darkness, or they would discern the signs of the times. The Roman Church is far-reaching in her plans and modes of operation. She is employing every device to extend her influence and increase her power in preparation for a fierce and determined conflict to regain control of the world, to reestablish persecution, and to undo all that Protestantism has done. Catholicism is gaining ground upon every side. See the increasing number of her churches and chapels in Protestant countries. Look at the popularity of her colleges and seminaries in America, so widely patronized by Protestants. Look at the growth of ritualism in England and the frequent defections to the ranks of the Catholics. These things should awaken the anxiety of all who prize the pure principles of the gospel. Protestants have tampered with and patronized popery. They have made compromises and concessions which papists themselves are surprised to see and fail to understand. Men are closing their eyes to the real character of Romanism and the dangers to be apprehended from her supremacy. The people need to be aroused to resist the advances of this most dangerous foe to civil and religious liberty. Many Protestants suppose that the Catholic religion is unattractive and that its worship is a dull, meaningless round of ceremony. Here they mistake. While Romanism is based upon deception, it is not a coarse and clumsy imposture. The religious service of the Roman Church is a most impressive ceremonial. Its gorgeous display and solemn rites fascinate the senses of the people and silence the voice of reason and conscience. The eye is charmed. Magnificent churches, imposing processions, golden altars, jeweled shrines, choice paintings, and exquisite sculpture appeal to the love of beauty. The ear is also captivated. The music is unsurpassed. The rich notes of the deep-toned organ, blending with the melody of many voices as it swells through the lofty domes and pillared aisles of her grand cathedrals, cannot fail to impress the mind with awe and reverence. This outward splendor, pomp, and ceremony that only mocks the longings of the sin-sick soul is an evidence of inward corruption. The religion of Christ needs not such attractions to recommend it. In the light shining from the cross, true Christianity appears so pure and lovely that